to right now in forming that coalition government with the ANC?
Well, basically what Louis was saying, you know, our left here was decimated, and certainly forming an alliance with the right-leaning Democratic Alliance is not on. So I think that it is time now for the trade union movement, for the social movements in South Africa to get their act together, to form probably a workers' party, and to make sure that the next coming election, which is in 2 years, local government elections are important here, at least we have something cobbled together which can actually claim some of the formal political space. I'm telling you, even the number of people who voted, Amy, it went down. People didn't feel like there was any party worthy of their vote, of their trust. The ANC undermined all trust in politics, in politicians. Indeed, when Louis talks about
Trevor, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue the conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Trevor Ngwane, Soweto-based activist, head of United Front, and longtime journalist Louis Friedberg. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon lawmakers put $5 million towards overhauling the state campaign finance system.
Pamplin newspapers are sold to a Mississippi conglomerate.
And in national news, President Biden plans to sign an executive order to effectively suspend the rights of asylum seekers.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 3rd, 2024. I'm Mike Fdaklis.
And I'm Nina Mayfair. Oregon will spend $5 million to update its old campaign finance filing system by 2028. The funds were approved by the state legislature's Joint Emergency Board on Friday. Oregon lawmakers passed a historic campaign finance bill in March to limit the amount of money individuals and groups can give directly to political candidates. But in their rush to pass the bill before the session ended, they didn't pass any funding to go along with the work, including to update the elections tracking site, OneStar. The law outlines specifics about what a new campaign finance dashboard has to have, including a list of the 100 largest campaign contributors. All of that work has to be done by 2028. So overhauling OneStar to meet the new requirements is part of what the money is going towards. Secretary of State LaVon Griffin-Vald says she'll need 17 new permanent employees and 4 temporary workers to pull it off. Some of their work will also be to address the backlog of election complaints. There are more than 750 outstanding complaints, some of them years old. 2024 has brought twice the number of complaints to the Secretary of State so far, according to the office. Extra workers will be needed to clear the backlog before the new system takes effect. The $5 million is funding passed 18-4 with a few Republicans voting against, saying they'd rather wait until the new legislative session early next year.
Pamplin Media has been sold to a Mississippi publisher, Carpenter Media Group, for an undisclosed amount. This includes papers like the Portland Tribune, the Clackamas Review, the Beaverton Valley Times, and other Portland area papers, plus some in Central Oregon. The chain was owned by Dr. Robert Pamplin Jr., an 82-year-old industrialist. He said in a statement to editor and publisher, quote, "After 25 years of operating Oregon's largest newspaper group, we decided to sell. Due to age and health reasons, it made sense to pass the company on to somebody else who will carry on the tradition of balanced journalism the old-fashioned way," end quote. Pamplin started the Portland Tribune in 2001 and bought up other regional papers, hoping to compete with the Oregonian. That came after an Oregonian investigation revealed that his other company, Ross Island Sand and Gravel, put contaminated soil to refill the 120-foot hole in the Willamette Riverbed created by the company for gravel mining. In recent years, Pamplin has also sold unused industrial real estate, including Ross Island itself, to his firm's pension fund. Willamette Week reports that these unusual transactions may violate federal pension law. It's not clear yet how the sale will impact Pamplin's newspaper operations. The current president, J. Brian Monahan, will continue to lead the paper as Carpenter Media Group's regional publisher. Carpenter now owns more than 180 publications and websites in the U.S. and Canada.
President Joe Biden is preparing to sign an executive order on immigration tomorrow, one that would effectively seal the border with Mexico to migrants when crossings increase. It would suspend long-existing protections for asylum seekers in the U.S. under U.S. law. People who flee their countries because they fear persecution can apply for asylum. If it's granted, they are granted protections and can stay in the country. Under the new executive order, if more than 2,500 people cross the border and claim asylum a day, any persons exceeding that limit would be turned away. Upon signing, that would close the border to asylum seekers, since current numbers are above that 2,500 threshold. When migrants come into the U.S. seeking asylum, they're given a future court date and allowed into the country until that time, which can be years. It's a similar structure to the one Biden proposed in his bipartisan immigration bill earlier this year, which was thwarted by Republicans. It's also extremely similar to a proposition from the Trump White House, which was blocked by Democrats and federal courts. Advocacy groups like the American Civil Liberties Union are prepared to sue, depending on what the order says. ACLU attorney Lee Gellerant said, quote, "A policy that effectively shuts down asylum would raise clear legal problems, just as it did when the Trump administration tried to end asylum," end quote. Politics on immigration have taken a hard shift for the right. In the last Biden-Trump campaign in 2019, Biden said this about Trump's immigration policy during a debate.
Former President Trump says he would be okay if put under house arrest and sent to jail. The White House unveils an advanced Gaza ceasefire plan, and voting rights advocates in Nevada aim to engage rural Latino voters. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I don't know that the public would stand it, you know. I'm not sure the public would stand for it.
Former president and now convicted felon Donald Trump told NBC he'd be okay if he gets jail or home confinement for falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments to adult actress Stormy Daniels. But Trump ominously warns that his followers might not accept it, and the public could hit what he calls a breaking point. Legal observers say prison time is unlikely for a 77-year-old first-time nonviolent offender. Trump is vowing to appeal once he's officially sentenced, which is scheduled just days before the Republican National Convention. His attorney, Will Scharf, is taking an aggressive tone.
We're going to vigorously appeal this verdict. I think this case is replete with reversible error. We are going to take this as high and as far as we need to, including to the U.S. Supreme Court.
To make the picture more complex, Washington State doesn't allow convicted felons to appear on the ballot. Others, including Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, are calling on the GOP to dump him. Bolton admits that's unlikely, but says they should.
We've never nominated a convicted felon before, and this is not a good time to start.
In his first public statement about former President Trump's guilty verdict, President Joe Biden says it reaffirmed that no one is above the law. Biden is calling for Trump and his followers to respect the justice system and not undermine what Biden calls a cornerstone of America.
And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict.
The Biden administration is urging both sides to accept a new Gaza ceasefire plan. Hamas reportedly views it positively. Right-wing members of Israel's governing coalition are threatening to bring the government down if it's accepted, but centrist members say they might bring the government down without a plan for Gaza's future. New York governor and Israel supporter Kathy Hochul echoes many who say the war has gone on too long.
We must stop this pain for these individuals.
The first phase of the plan would include what the White House calls a full and complete ceasefire, including the withdrawal of Israel defense forces from Gaza's population centers. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia re-registered as an independent last week, raising questions about his plans. The longtime Democrat had not sought re-election, giving Republicans a shot at a seat in a deep red state. But as an independent, Manchin could be eyeing the Senate or his old job as governor. Still, he insists he's just being a centrist.
The brands have gotten so bad. If you have a D by your name, a Democrat, you're supposed to hate Republicans. If you have an R by your name, you're supposed to hate Democrats. I don't hate either one, and they're not our enemies.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Oregon is trying out a first-in-the-nation experiment to use Medicaid dollars to prevent health impacts from climate-related disasters, according to reporting from KFF Health News. Since March, the state has been sending out equipment, like air conditioners and air purifiers, to residents at risk from events such as extreme heat and wildfire smoke, which have increased in Oregon in recent years. Dave Baden is Deputy Director for Programs and Policy at the Oregon Health Authority. He says
that's really the excitement and
the OHA will be examining the effectiveness of this benefit.
That's really the excitement and the test that we're doing here in Oregon is looking at this and whether it makes sense and whether it reduces costs, whether it makes people healthier and trying to protect them from a continuing changing climate.
Baden stresses that only a subset of Medicaid recipients in the state will be eligible based on their individual needs. He says the program is a reaction to increasingly hot summers in the Northwest and extreme events like the 2021 heat dome, in which more than 100 people in the state died. Josh Ballack, with the insurer All Care Health in Grants Pass, says his organization is already sending out and stockpiling equipment to ship out, noting that they have air conditioners, air filters, and mini fridges stored at All Care's facility.
We've kind of slowly become this storage unit and kind of just trying to work well ahead of the crisis before it gets here, because we just have gotten to the point where, sadly, in Southern Oregon, we know that we're going to have more climate emergencies.
Baden believes Medicaid is the right program for this kind of benefit, noting that victims of the 2021 heat dome were low income.
A disproportionate number of heat-related illnesses are people with lower incomes. Statewide, more than 60% of patients with heat-related illnesses lived in areas with median household incomes below $50,000.
That was Dave Baden from the Oregon Health Authority.
A group of veterans with cancer is speaking out after the California base they lived on, Fort Ord, was excluded from a federal list of bases contaminated by Agent Orange, despite mounting evidence of its use. Suzanne Potter reports.
A group of veterans with cancer who lived or served at Fort Ord near Monterey says the feds are unfairly denying compensation, even as evidence mounts that the Army sprayed the highly toxic pesticide to control poison oak. The Department of Defense recently proposed a rule that would allow compensation for veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange and have what's called a presumptive condition at 17 U.S. bases where the chemical was tested, used, or stored. According to reporting from KFF Health News, they left Fort Ord, which closed in 1994, off the list. Dean Osborne was stationed there in 1979 and now has a spot on his left lung and kidney, hypothyroidism, and prostate cancer, an illness that has been tied to Agent Orange exposure.
We all had to march. We all had to run in this grass. We all had to sit down in it. We didn't know anything that was sprayed. It all got into the water system. We'd fill our canteens up.
The Department of Veterans Affairs has said Osborne's conditions are age-related and denied his disability claim. When asked why Fort Ord was left off the compensation list, the DOD referred questions to the Army, which did not respond. The VA has said a presumptive condition is not at all required for a veteran to receive benefits from VA. Julie Akey is a retired Foreign Service officer who lived at Fort Ord and later developed multiple myeloma.
I'm sick because of my time at Fort Ord. I'm not sure if it was Agent Orange that made me sick or if it was TCE that made me sick, but both of them were there and both are linked to multiple myeloma.
Akey runs a Facebook group and keeps a list of people stationed on the base who later were diagnosed with cancer and other illnesses. So far, she has tallied more than 1,600 former Fort Ord residents who became sick. Pat Elder is director of Military Poisons, a nonprofit that seeks justice for people exposed to toxic substances on U.S. military sites.
I found very clear documentation showing that the Army sprayed 9,000 acres of land that had been covered with poison oak. They sprayed it with Agent Orange, and they did so over the course of at least 20 years.
Elder says he's found evidence of Agent Orange use on about four dozen bases that are not on the DOD's list. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, LTAR, Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will likely see some showers too, with a high of 66. Today in history, in 1992, Australian Aboriginal land rights are recognized in the case Mabo v. Queensland. It was the first case in Australia to recognize the pre-colonial land interests of Indigenous Australians within Australia common law. The quote of the day is from English writer Sidney Smith, who said, quote, "The truth is that most men want knowledge, not for itself, but for the superiority which knowledge confers, and the means they employ to secure this superiority are as wrong as the ultimate object, for no man can ever end with being superior who will not begin with being inferior."
Two California tribes sign on to a stewardship deal with the U.S. government for newly protected land called Muluk Layuk. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two California tribes have entered into a co-stewardship agreement to manage and care for newly protected sacred land. It's part of President Joe Biden's expansion of the Barry S. Snow Mountain National Monument in Northern California. Christina Onnested reports.
The 13,000 acres new to the National Monument are known as Condor Ridge or Muluk Layuk, sacred land to the Yochadihi and Quetzaldihi Winton Nations. As part of a federal agreement, the tribes are now co-managers. Here's Yochadihi Tribal Chair Anthony Roberts.
This land has deep meaning for our people, and it has for centuries, for countless generations. We've been stewards of this land. We've been taught by our ancestors and our elders to make sure that we take care of the land, and for years and generations, the land will take care of us. And as we see that coming to fruition today, it's beyond words. We're just extremely grateful.
Muluk Layuk is also home to many endangered or sensitive flora and fauna, including the Indian Valley Brodiaea herb, the dry Mary dwarf flax, which has small white flowers, McNab cypress, Tule elk, foothill yellow-legged frogs, and spring-fed wetlands this wildlife depends on. The expanded Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument calls for a plan to allow motor and bicycle vehicle use. That's in line with care and management of the sensitive wildlife there. Christina Onnested, National Native News, California.
In Alaska, the Kowalungan tribe of Unalaska is working to reintroduce blue mussels as a safe food source for the Aleutian Islands community. KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi reports locals are transplanting mussels around the island to study whether this reduces the chances of the shellfish becoming toxic.
Traditionally, blue mussels have been a part of subsistence in Unalaska. But in recent years, reduced numbers and concerns about paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP, have limited how much locals can safely harvest. The Kowalungan Tribe of Unalaska wants to change that. The tribe is partnering with Alaska consultant group Two Bears Environmental. And together, they're running a pilot study to see if moving blue mussels around the island affects the levels of paralytic shellfish toxins, or PST. According to the tribe, PST levels can differ greatly in neighboring locations, and it can be hard to detect. People cannot smell, taste, or see PST, and it cannot be cleaned or cooked out. In mid-May, scientists collected mussels from the Dutch Harbor Spit and transplanted them to other parts of the island. They plan to wait till September to collect the blue mussels again and test them for toxins. The big questions are whether the mussels will survive and populate after being moved, and if they do, will they be safe to eat? In 2020, a person died in Unalaska after eating mussels and snails with high levels of PST. Scientists say climate change is playing a role in blue mussel quality, like higher toxin levels. According to locals, there aren't as many blue mussels on beaches as there used to be. The tribe says they hope transplanting the mussels will allow them to populate new areas. Scientists say if the conditions are right, mussels can grow like weeds. This pilot study is part of a larger program to restore or help subsistence foods in Unalaska. The tribe wants to research other subsistence foods like aquatic snails and clams, but this summer they say they hope this pilot project will be the first step to restoring blue mussels as a safe and sustainable food source like it once was before. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report looks at the well-being of older Americans. The America's Health Ranking Senior Report shows a mixed bag for the living conditions of older adults. Oregon ranks 16th in the report. Dr. Katie Drago at OHSU says one concerning metric in the report finds worsening substance abuse among older Oregonians.
Oftentimes, we as medical providers may not think that someone older may be at risk for developing a relapse or a new onset substance use condition.
On the positive side, internet access has increased nationwide for older adults, and early deaths decreased 8% between 2021 and 2022, although they did not dip below pre-pandemic levels. Dr. Rhonda Randall, a geriatrician and chief medical officer with United Healthcare, cites other troubling signs for the well-being of older adults.
We see more seniors living with depression and frequent mental distress. We see some challenges in some economic measures like poverty and worsening housing cost burden, and more seniors saying that they have food insecurity, that they're worried about getting access to food.
Drago says when it comes to housing, many Oregonians want to age in place.
Meaning to be able to live in the community and stay in a home that maybe they've lived in for a long time, or it's an intergenerational family home. And we know there are real health benefits to being able and being supported to age in place.
That was Dr. Katie Drago from OHSU.
Justice reform groups in North Carolina are watching the progress of the Public Safety and Prison Reduction Act. Proposed by the Brennan Center for Justice, it's a $1 billion proposal to Congress to pay states to rethink and shrink their prison populations. In North Carolina, about 57,000 people are incarcerated, mostly in state prisons. Shantia Hudson has more.
In North Carolina, about 57,000 people are behind bars, with most housed in state prisons. A new proposal has surfaced to bring those numbers down, but it would require approval from Congress. It's known as the Public Safety and Prison Reduction Act, and it would pay states to rethink their sentencing policies and reduce their prison populations. Attorney Hernandez Stroud is with the Brennan Center for Justice, which is making the proposal. He points to state prisons as the core issue in mass incarceration, holding 87% of people incarcerated in the U.S.
Congress could help states break the cycle of excessive imprisonment and its devastating impact on families and communities by offering funding as an incentive to both shrink state prison populations and implement humane alternatives.
Earlier this year, North Carolina's Legislative Oversight Committee on Justice and Public Safety learned the state's current prison population has already exceeded projections not expected until 2027. Stroud says the Brennan Center proposal would emphasize accountability and community input. States would be required to partner with researchers and local stakeholders, including formerly incarcerated people, to track the input of their reforms. Stroud believes it could also help to right some of the problems in the criminal justice system, such as wrongful convictions or extreme sentencing.
This legislation could send a powerful message to the nation that some issues are bigger than partisan politics, like delivering public safety while promoting a fair and humane justice system.
According to the proposal, if the 25 states with the largest prison populations could reduce them by 20%, nearly 180,000 fewer people would be behind bars. But the Public Safety and Prison Reduction Act has yet to be introduced in Congress. Its $1 billion estimated price tag may be among the reasons. For North Carolina News Service, I'm Shantia Hudson.
With the start of hurricane season, the importance of natural defenses becomes ever more apparent, according to conservationists. In states like Florida, North Carolina, and South Carolina, salt marshes are invaluable in mitigating the impacts of these powerful storms, and more is being done to preserve them. Trimble Gomes reports on the latest effort to protect them.
With the start of hurricane season, salt marshes are among the natural features playing a critical role in protecting coastal communities by absorbing storm surges, reducing flooding, and preventing erosion. These coastal wetlands with a variety of flora are filled and drained by the tide. On average, salt marshes provide $695,000 of value per square mile from possible damage during storms, according to a University of California San Diego study. Heather Nagy from the North Florida Land Trust emphasizes the critical role these marshes play.
They can absorb up to 1.5 million gallons of floodwater, which is equivalent to about 2.25 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So they're truly amazing at what they can do to help absorb water, absorb that wave energy, and decrease damage to neighboring communities.
Nagy is part of the South Atlantic Salt Marsh Initiative, which aims to save 1 million acres of salt marsh stretching from the coasts of North Carolina to Florida. Other natural barriers include living shorelines, forests, estuaries, and barrier islands, to name a few. As sea level rise, salt marshes naturally retreat landward. However, this movement can be hindered by natural barriers or man-made structures, like roads and buildings. Nagy says each state in the South Atlantic Salt Marsh Initiative is forming teams and roadmaps to protect and restore existing salt marshes and conserve migration corridors.
And we're all going to be working together to identify, prioritize, and advance salt marsh projects that will help to protect and bolster the resilience of local communities and also infrastructure throughout Northeast Florida, throughout all of those areas of salt marsh.
Studies show areas with intact natural defenses, such as dunes, wetlands, and marshes, experience less damage than areas where these features had been degraded or removed. So Nagy says protecting and strengthening an area's natural defenses is one of the best ways to prepare for the storm season. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts.
The Black Oak Center for Sustainable, Renewable Living started from an unusual place, an 8-year-old spurring his dad to climate action. Dr. Anthony Lazowitz has more on this story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. One December, about 20 years ago, Fred Carter's 8-year-old son, Akeen, was upset when there was no snow in Chicago on Christmas. In trying to understand why, Akeen began learning about climate change and how his parents' generation had contributed to the problem.
He came up to me and my wife, and he said, "What are you going to do about it?" So we've been trying to fix it ever since.
Back then, Carter worked as a supplier for General Motors, but he started learning about his industry's climate impact and eventually left his job. And he began reading and attending conferences and trainings about climate solutions, including clean energy and sustainable food production.
I've never been in a world like that before, but it was exciting and it disrupted so much, but it created so much.
And he was determined to use his new knowledge to help others. The family bought 40 acres south of Chicago, moved out of the city, and began living off-grid. On their land, they created the Black Oak Center for Sustainable Renewable Living. The center educates others about reducing carbon pollution, adopting clean energy, growing local food, and reconnecting with the earth. So Carter is still responding to his son's challenge from all those years ago. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 3rd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer and engineer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegethoff, Shantaya Hudson, Antonia Gonzalez, Trimmel Gomes, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Mike Fdeklis. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a KBOO member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coastal Range Radio.